our world. It's amazing that so many of you could be here today. We have politicians, we have princesses, and we also have activists. And it's so amazing that only AIDS can really do this. Only AIDS can really bring us all together. And AIDS really is the great unifier of our generation. Your Royal Highness, Deputy President, Your Excellencies, your leadership is so crucial to what we really have to do. And of course, we're broadcasting live on television, through the web, and on social media, making sure that you at home are as much a part of today as all of us here in this room. So over the next 40 minutes, in fact, the 90 minutes, what are we going to do? We're going to bring on some of the major stakeholders in the world global response to AIDS, and we're going to find out what have we done so far. Remember, it's been 30 years now, almost 30 years. What have we done right? What have we done wrong? And what do we still need to do as we march into the next decade? That's what we're going to think about. That's what we're going to talk about. And the key word here today, as Michelle says, is reshaping. Let's go now to video and let's see what are some of the things and the biggest issues in our AIDS response.
HIV treatment is giving many families back their future. More than 5 million people are on treatment today, with 10 million waiting for hope. It will take a new, radically simplified treatment platform. Young people are leading the prevention revolution. In countries like Kenya, the next generation is setting the tone, learning about HIV prevention for social change. With smart investments and innovative solutions, together we can reach our universal access goals.
Right here, right now. Of course, that is the big theme of this conference. All of you know it. It's all over the slogans through Vienna and also up on our conference programs. But to tell us more about what exactly it really means, we're joined now by our first guest, Michel Sidibé, the head of UNAIDS. If you know Michel, you'll know that he loves to quote his father. And if you know his father, you'll know that he has always been telling Michel that there's no such thing as being tired. And that's pretty much the man himself. He's never tired, he's always full of energy, he's always inspiring, and he fuels each one of us towards a better, a fresher, a more revolutionary response against AIDS. Many things give me pleasure in life, but this one especially so. Michel Sidibé.
Thanks. How are you?
Michel,
James.
That was a nice bit, and now comes a tough bit. So let's go straight into this, okay? Because if we look around the conference, and we're all getting ready, we're all getting comfortable, I'm hearing amazing words here. I'm hearing reshaping, I'm hearing re-energizing, I'm hearing redefining. Let's start off with this. Why do we need any of this?
I think you were mentioning something which is very important. 5 million people on treatment, 10 million people more waiting. And those 10 million people, lives are hanging on balance. And for me today, we are talking about moving from area of abundance to area of scarcity. But at the same time, we are seeing so much opportunity. We are seeing new movement for PrEP, which is pre-exposure prophylaxis. But we are seeing also maybe breakthrough soon on vaccine. We never know. But also we are seeing young people, like you were just mentioning, leading this prevention revolution. But at the same time, I'm scared for what I'm seeing around me. I'm seeing some government were cracking down on vulnerable groups. I'm seeing, for example, epidemic shifting in your own country last year. 30% of a new infection occur amongst men having sex with men. So we are seeing also hope with South Africa launching one of the biggest programs in the world. I never seen 15 million people could be tested before 2011, but not just tested by for HIV, but for blood pressure, for sugar level. And if we found any women with HIV positive, for cervical cancer, for tuberculosis, that is why it's the time to reshape. It is a defining moment. It is a time to call and show integrity. It's time to do business differently.
Michel, I hear you. I'm sure a lot of people in this room agree with you about why we need to reshape. But it sounds great, and I want the meat and potatoes and all this. I want to know how exactly you're going to do it. What are you going to do that is so different that you can really allow us to dream this universal access into universal reality? And I want a guarantee from you. I really do want a guarantee from you that 24 months from now, when we meet in Washington in 2012, you're not going to tell me the same thing, because 4 million people by then just won't have the time to wait. So tell me the plan.
You know, universal access for me is about social justice. It's not just about 100%. It's about redistribution of opportunity. It's about giving voice to those voiceless. So for me, that will never happen, universal access, if we don't bring innovation. It will never happen if we don't have a prevention revolution. Prevention revolution means what? It means to do business differently. It means that to make sure that all our countries could know their epidemic and their response, having better scientific and behavioral data, making sure that we can use all the knowledge we have today and have a concentrated approach to deal with hotspots. We have circumcisions which are being accepted today socially, which were not. We could continue to use certainly also evidence with condoms, preservatives which are made available to young people. So that is the revolution. This revolution will not happen without building what I'm saying, which is a preventive diplomacy with leaders like the Deputy President from South Africa, with many other activists who are in this room, with all the people who are not here, but which are so critical for us to transform the world. Their voice are important. But secondly, what is important for me is Treatment 2.0. Treatment 2.0 is what? Is just the next generation. Let us be realistic. Costs are rising. Even in many countries where we have been, people are starting losing hope, and we need to bring this hope back. And to bring this hope back, we need to simplify treatment. We need to have drugs which are can be administered easily. We need to make it owned by communities. We need to make sure that we can have diagnostics which are not costly. And we'll work with our colleagues from WHO. I hope they are in this room. I think I saw some of them. And we will work also particularly to make people understanding that this treatment for prevention is not just a dream. It's possible if we are all together. Pharmaceutical firms and government, civil society for shared responsibility.
What I love about you, Michelle, is that you may be the UN Undersecretary General, but you're still very much the field activist at heart. That's Michelle Sidibe. But let's add to that. We've heard from the activists. I want to get a different take on things over here. Let's shake things up a bit. I'm going to ask Dr. Julio Montaner to come up to the stage. But before he does, of course, he brings science not just to politics. He brings science to the people. And in his own special way, if you know Julio, he's definitely not short on passion by any means. He is, of course, the head of the International AIDS Society. He is the chair of this year's conference. Thank you, Julio, so much for hosting us this year. It all means to lead you. Come here, Julio Montaner.
Thank you.
Michelle just said that 5 million people have made it. And I want to start off first because, you know, people always talk about the things that we haven't done right, but we've done so many things that have worked. These are major achievements. 5 million people, they go into ARV. So let's talk about this. 5 million people go into ARV. We've got to thank some of the people who obviously are here, the nurses, the scientists, the activists, the people living with HIV themselves, of course, the state leadership that we've been talking about. Julio, that's enough about the 5 million. No, really, because I'm going to corner you right over here. What do you have to say about the 10 million people who are still waiting?
I think it's a crime. It's a crime. We cannot wait. People infected with HIV who have a medical indication to be on treatment, they are dying because they are not being treated. Not only they are dying, their families are suffering. They are also weakening our economies. So this is bad for the people. This is bad for their people. This is bad for society. We need to do something, and we need to do it now. Beyond that, people who are not treated are more likely, dramatically more likely, to transmit the infection. We have to stop this. This is nonsense. We have to stop it. We have to stop it now.
I think this all sounds really super. Between you and Michelle, we've got the vision, we've got the plan, we've got some really concrete measures in this. But as a man of science, as a scientist, do we have the body of evidence to back up what people, what leaders, like Michelle, just told us just then?
Absolutely. Michelle is right on the money. The data that we have accumulated over the last 30 years shows perfectly clear HIV treatment is nearly 100% effective to stop and arrest the progression of the disease on a long-term basis, puts people back to work, it returns you to a near normal life. Also, is highly effective in terms of preventing HIV transmission. We know, in fact, UNH and the WHO have called, rightly so, for the elimination of vertical transmission, that is, from a mother that is infected to a child, because with treatment of the mother, we shall have no more children being born with HIV. There should be nobody being born with HIV today in this world. It's easy. We can do it. We should do it. And the data that we have accumulated over the last 5 years shows conclusively that treating those that have a medical indication, as we have shown in the province of British Columbia, with tremendous support from our political leadership in the province, is highly effective in decreasing HIV transmission. Today, 2 hours ago, The Lancet published our experience of 15 years, where by treating more, we actually have decreased the number of new infections by more than 60%. What else do we need? We just need to do it.
Julio Montaner, thank you very much. Michelle CDB, of course, these are our speeches for now. Still going to get, it's going to get more interesting from here. Could you guys come over me 1 second over here? I'm going to put you right here. And we're going to welcome a very, very special guest, and we're so honored to have him here. Our next guest was born in a South Africa so different to the South Africa that, of course, we have the privilege to know today. He was a student activist, he was a trade unionist, and with Nelson Mandela, he was in prison for 10 years, over on Robben Island. But that decade behind bars did not break him. If anything, he says it emboldened his fight for human rights. That passion from all those years ago has by no means stopped. This year, he took a public test with President Jacob Zuma to bring the HIV counseling and testing campaign to 50 million people. That's the biggest testing global campaign of its kind. That's how significant it is. But of course, he also shows his political commitment and his personal conviction just by being with us here in Vienna today. So many things we want to say about you, but we also want to welcome you, the Deputy President of the Republic of South Africa, the Honorable Geleme Motlanthe.
Thank you very much, James Chow, Program Director, fellow activists, Michelle Sidibe, Royal Highness, the Princess, and all eminent participants in this conference. As a politician, as a deputy president of South Africa, I have access to certain platforms. We participate in structures such as the G8, G20. And we've come to a view that it is our duty and responsibility to utilize all of these platforms to ensure that even as the world experiences an economic downturn, investments in the fight against HIV and AIDS must not be the soft target for austerity measures. And of course, we cannot ask of others what we ourselves are unable and or unwilling to do. So, in a South African government, advised and guided by the South African National AIDS Council, an all-inclusive structure of stakeholders, participants, people living with HIV. We ourselves have committed to increase our budget allocation for making antiretroviral treatment accessible to all of our people. In that regard, progress is being recorded, but there is much work still to be done for us to ensure that 80% of those in need of treatment are on antiretroviral treatment. Treatment coverage has expanded rapidly in the last few years, and South Africa is seeing a drop in new HIV infections among the young for the first time. Patients started on treatment need to be maintained on treatment, even though we go through an economic recession. The global financial crisis has impacted on all countries, and South Africa has had to prioritize the HIV response to ensure funds are available, even though gaps still remain. Because we believe that investing in HIV is investing in development. And South Africa has prioritized the AIDS response as an investment in life, hope, health systems, and human development with a view to improve the quality of life. AIDS contributes significantly to the high maternal and child mortality in South Africa, and HIV remains a primary challenge in meeting the Millennium Development Goals 4, 5, and 6. And therefore, by taking the AIDS response further out of isolation and improving HIV treatment and prevention services, significant reductions in maternal, infant, and tuberculosis morbidity and mortality can be achieved. This investment underscores the pivotal role of HIV in achieving the Millennium Development Goals. Now is the time to renew commitment to universal access. We need to renew the political declaration of commitment made by the UN General Assembly in 2006 and extend the global commitment and mandate to achieve universal access by 2015. In order to bring it in line with the MDG time frame. Preventing new infections will break the trajectory of the AIDS epidemic. We have just launched in South Africa a very important campaign for testing and counseling led by the President of the Republic of South Africa, Mr. Jacob Zuma, and many prominent leaders, the premiers of our provinces, sports personalities, and so on, participated in this public testing and counseling campaign. We do so because we believe that all instruments available to our country must be utilized effectively. Firstly, to enhance prevention so that we reduce the number of new infections. And secondly, we do so because we believe that it is important for all our people to know their status. This is in line with the theme that the South African AIDS Council selected for our message during the International AIDS Day, which is that I am responsible, we are responsible, South Africa takes responsibility. That's the theme. And therefore, it is important for all of our people to know their status. And as Michelle has indicated, in this testing, we do not only test for HIV, we also test for other diseases, such as tuberculosis, sugar diabetes, levels of cholesterol, and so on. And we believe that all of our clinics and centers that in the past were identified for providing treatment, all that must now be integrated into the entire health system, so that if a pregnant woman goes to the antenatal clinic, they should be provided with treatment and testing for all related diseases, including HIV. South Africa has prioritized prevention of mother-to-child transmission treatment, medical male circumcision, promoting the use of male and female condoms to prevent new infections. In one of our provinces of KwaZulu-Natal, which has the very high incidence as well as prevalence of positive people, the practice of male circumcision had been discontinued for over 200 years. And today, that had to be reintroduced because it is now proven that male circumcision reduces the risk of new infections by about 60%. And that is why even tradition of not practicing male circumcision has had to be abandoned in an endeavor to strengthen the arsenal of instruments at our disposal to fight against the scourge of this pandemic. And to do that, we had to mobilize traditional leaders, persuade them, convince them to understand the separation between, because this practice of male circumcision has been linked traditionally to the rite of passage to manhood. And we've had to persuade them that medical male circumcision is not a substitute for whatever they want to practice as tradition. This is also a message that has been reinforced by the champions for an AIDS-free generation, led by former President Festus Mogae of Botswana, who have been crisscrossing the sub-Saharan Africa to communicate this important message to ensure that the communities compare notes, share experiences, and together strengthen the fight against HIV and AIDS. And we are putting human rights and law to work for HIV because we believe we cannot achieve a prevention revolution or effective responses in general without the protection and promotion of the rights of the vulnerable groups, including people living with HIV, sex workers, men who have sex with men, those who use injections to abuse substances and drugs, transgender people, women and girls, and prisoners. With regards to treatment, 2.0 as a new treatment platform which radically simplifies the way we provide treatment. We all say that is the way to go. And that this treatment 2.0 is a platform that must be supported by all, because it calls for the radical simplification of treatment and its delivery to improve patient outcomes, scale up coverage, and reduce costs. It also emphasizes the potential of treatment as prevention approaches to significantly reduce the number of new HIV and tuberculosis infections. Simpler treatment approaches will, of course, allow antiretroviral therapy to move out of specialized structures down to the primary and secondary layers of the health system, thus minimizing expensive clinical monitoring and maximizing the impact of AIDS investments in improving health systems. We can unleash the power of technology by linking scientific advances to social change. We see this happening in South Africa, where, as I said, President Zuma has challenged the traditional stigmatization associated with HIV by openly discussing and personally endorsing HIV testing and circumcision, bringing culturally contentious issues such as circumcision, injecting drug use, or men who have sex with men to the fore of public dialogue, provides the impetus to shift social norms in support of more effective AIDS responses, because it frees people from being prisoners to prejudice. And of course, we are thankful that we have in South Africa, in the person of Nelson Mandela, former president, a champion who has, through his 4664 campaign, taken this stigma out of the discussions around HIV and AIDS. And today happens to be his 92nd birthday. And as we celebrate this day, we can only honor his towering memory, honor his towering dignity by taking this by taking the view that we must do more with investments we have today, and we must not cut back on investments for health under any circumstances. Program Director, now is the time for us to ensure that never again shall future generations be impelled to live with this scourge. Because if we fail, we would be failing future generations, since it is our generation which is in the eye of this pandemic, and it is our generation which must therefore lay down the foundation not only for the reduction, but for the total elimination of new infections. And that can be done, and we believe that it is doable, and that if there's any lesson that we learned from the FIFA World Cup, is that many teams you know, which are blessed with individual stars, did not make it to the final. And it is the teams that played with less stars, but that played as a team, which eventually lifted the trophy. And we believe that if all of us, wherever we are, can tackle this as a team, victory is certain, and that we will overcome. And I thank you.
Thank the Deputy President of the Republic of South Africa for being with us today. And we wish that Nelson Mandela could be with us, but we hope that when you return to South Africa, you could wish him a very happy birthday on behalf of all of us. We also, of course, want to congratulate South Africa for an amazing World Cup. What the World Cup taught us is that Africa showed a different face, not one of poverty, not one of rejection, but one of the rainbow nation that we really know it is. Thank you very much to the Deputy President, to Michel Sidibe, and to Julio Montaner for their comments over there. And this is where all of you come in. This is where we really want to hear your voice. This is a town hall that's never been done before. It's purposefully invigorating, and it really very much depends on you. If we want to make all these kind of prevention revolutions or treatment 2.0 is a living reality, we don't just need the political leadership, we also need everybody, the activists, the medical workers, the people living with HIV, all of them, the civil society, to come together and to be completely united on this one approach, amongst other approaches as well. This is a fun bit I promised you. We do want to hear from you. As we said, on your chairs over there, you will have your red and green cards. Have that ready, because we are going to use that. This is how you can make your voice heard. This is how we can quickly get a gauge right round this room of what you really think. And also, we want to hear you. We want you to get up. We want you to stand. We want you to ask questions. Now, to help focus all those thoughts in, let's turn over to the screen right there, and let's look at some of the major issues if we're really going to reshape the future of AIDS today.
We can reach more people with fresh ideas. We can start a prevention revolution. We can overcome the obstacles to universal human rights. We can empower tomorrow's leaders.
So that's how we're going to reshape the future of AIDS today. I told you we get joined by a fantastic panel, and let's welcome them up onto the stage. The Honorable Minister of Health and Social Welfare of Lesotho, Ramatla Peng, also US Congresswoman Barbara Lee, Claudia Omada, youth leader Relake Odetunyimbo, a Pan-African activist. Welcome to our panel today. Can I just start by saying that it makes me so proud to see four women of different ages on our stage today. And may I also add, finally. Let's go on to our first topic. We're going to talk about human rights. Remember, rights here, right now, that's the big theme of this. This is how we're going to use a human rights-based approach to try to revolutionize our global response to AIDS. But human rights is something that we hear all the time. I mean, how often, if you open up a newspaper or if you switch on the television, you hear the word human rights all the time. how we interpret it is often affected and impacted by where we come from and our own personal backgrounds. So I want to start off with the Honourable Minister of Lesotho. I would love to ask you, as a government leader, in one or two sentences, sharp as a nail, tell me, what does human rights mean to you? And I know you can do it.
Thank you. Is this thing on? Thank you, Program Director, and thank you for inviting me to this wonderful forum. From the government point of view, human rights, what does that mean? It means government has to have programs that protect the voiceless, the weak, the ill, and in this particular respect, it means that we should have in place programs that will protect unborn children and women, programs that are child-friendly, women-friendly, programs that are accessible to all people. Yes, you will be sometimes accused of contravening human rights, but from the government point of view, I think I stand accused of contravening civil rights, because honestly, I will have every pregnant woman tested. I'll have every child who's born tested in Lesotho, and I'll make sure that everyone who walks through that door to a health facility is tested for HIV. It is a national emergency. Therefore, if it means I'm accused of civil rights, so be it. That's what I mean by human rights.
That's fantastic. Let's roll to the next person, Claudia. Claudia is a new friend. I'm here. Claudia is a new friend from Chile. Now, human rights, and let's be frank about this, especially in some of the countries that we're from here, is a bad word. It's a dirty word. You're from Chile, you're born in Canada because your parents are student activists who had to leave Chile and they came back the year after the dictatorship came down. Tell me what human rights means to you personally.
Human rights to me means choices, choices about your life, your sexuality, your sexual orientation. It means respect, respect about the choices you do, your occupation, whether you want to use drugs, whether you want to engage in sex work. It means access, access to treatment, access to information, access to sexuality education.
And also, Congresswoman. U.S. Congresswoman Barbara Lee from California. You know, apart from being a government leader, apart from being so widely respected, not just in the United States, but way, way beyond, you're a woman. You were a single mother, and you raised your child using food stamps. Food stamps, that's not an easy way to raise a child. Tell me, what does human rights mean to you?
Thank you very much. Thank all of you for being here, especially those of you who are on the front line fighting for justice. And human rights means justice. It means equal opportunity. It means non-discrimination. As an African-American woman who was discriminated against, I could not attend public schools in America because I was black. The struggle for human rights means providing equal access to everyone, including as it relates to healthcare, HIV and AIDS, for the MSM community, for LGBT community, for women who are commercial sex workers, for injecting drug users, for women, for children, for everyone who has been shut out, for the most vulnerable. As an African-American woman coming from America, I think it's clear that communities of color in the United States really do understand what human rights is from a very experiential basis, and also that is our commitment to make sure that human rights prevails throughout the world for every vulnerable population.
Congresswoman, I loved what you said just there. It reminds me of what Coretta Scott King said when she started taking up gay rights, that one injustice for one person is injustice for every one of us. Let's move now to Africa. The Pan-African activist is Rulaki. We're so happy that you're here, of course. Welcome to our panel. And I want to ask you quickly, what's your take?
As a woman living with HIV, human rights to me means rights to life, rights to medications, rights to prevention services. There is no human right if there is no funding to continue treatment. There is no human right if a woman is unprotected. There is no human right if we cannot protect the rights of our women, which means no to gender-based violence, and which recognizes the fact that as a woman, my matrimonial bed is a high-risk setting for me and HIV, and just to understand that looking at human rights, we must ensure that we have continued access to prevention services. It doesn't matter what part of the world we're in, whether we are women in Africa or men who have sex with men or sex workers or injecting drug users. As Africans, we've got every single community represented, and also for us that children have access to treatment. That's what human rights means to me.
Thanks very much, Rilake. Now, get those red cards and those green cards ready, because it's when we all get involved. So get those cards ready. Thank you very much. Obviously, very, very different opinions based on history, depending on politics, personal background, and also on status, and also on leadership, and so on and so forth. So what I want to ask all of you here today, using your red and green cards, do you think that human rights is the most important issue in our response to AIDS in this year, 2010, here in Vienna? If you think it is the most important thing, I want to see the green. If you don't think it is, then put up your red. I'm a little outnumbered over here. And hang on. I need a microphone from Michaela or Edward, and we're going to zoom right over here. No, keep them up. I need to see. Sweeping. Sir, you're holding two. That's not allowed. And madam, come, join me over here. I want to ask you, well, it's your fault for putting up a red card. We love debate, and we love different opinions because they're all valid. Quickly, in a room where it's 80% green, why did we see the red? What do you think is the most important thing that we should be focused on then?
I agree with the Minister of Health from Lesotho when she said that every pregnant woman, every person who comes to a health facility should be tested for HIV. And to some people, that might go against human rights.
May I quickly ask you which country you're from?
I'm from South Africa.
Thank you very much for that comment over there. Obviously, a lot of you agree. We don't want to hear from that. Oh, you have two red cards up there. You have two, not just one, but two. So he vehemently disagrees. Let's find out what's going on over here. Name, country, what then is most important?
Cipriano Martinez from Australia. I just think that people with HIV, or just people generally, have a right to choose whether they get tested or not. So I am totally against mandatory testing. So that's my opinion.
Okay, that's fine. You're valid. You know, that's completely valid. That's what you think. But a lot of people, it's not just about testing. It's about knowing your status. Don't you think that's powerful? Don't you think that you would want to know this? You could act on it?
The only value in knowing your status is when you have a right to universal access with that status. So when they come together...
That's very, very beautiful. I'm going to... Any comments from our panel? Who wants to speak first? Rilake, I see you. Claudia, who's it going to be?
Yes, most certainly. We need to have people tested, but the question is, what happens after testing? Where do we go once we know your HIV status? It is unacceptable. It's against everything we believe in if people are tested just to have data. We need to go and ensure that people have access to those follow-up services.
It's all very interesting. This is obviously going to come up again and again and again. We're probably going to revisit human rights. It's not a section in itself. Let's quickly ask a quick question from Aliona. Aliona Pashinka from Russia, from representing an NGO called AIDS InfoShare. She has organized three times now these amazing conferences that have taken place in Russia but are pan-Eastern European. What I want to ask you is this. Obviously, why are we in Vienna? Because of the situation and the rates of new infections over in Eastern Europe. When you gather together huge amounts of people, you had 2,500 delegates at your last count, at your last conference. What are the biggest obstacles to human rights in the region?
Can I help? Okay. So we are here in the Vienna conference 9 months after the Russia conference. And we are here because we want to call on global AIDS leaders. And there are three main concerns that the people from my region wanted you to be heard. The first one is that we want you to continue to implement prevention programs that are not welcomed by politicians, but are needed to be welcome, to be funded for our region, to make decisions that are not money-driven, to make decisions that are not politics-driven, to make the decisions that our people need driven. And also, I would like you, political, global AIDS leaders, to keep programs of civil society to be eligible no matter what country of income we are. And also, I would like you to keep remember that human rights, this is the right of every single person. Just one human being, no matter who is this, young woman, person living with HIV AIDS, MSM, IDU, commercial sex workers, we all want to be protected and respected by you, by us, and by our government.
Thanks very much, Alucina. That's a little bit on human rights. I want to quickly move on to prevention. 3 million people, almost 3 million people getting infected each and every year. Clearly outrageous and unacceptable. The epidemic, it would suggest, based on the numbers, is clearly outpacing any kind of efforts and resources that we currently have. So we focus over the next 6 days. How can we use this time? What's our way forward? How can we create demand for societal response to AIDS? My first question back to our panel. Congresswoman Lee, you have a daughter. Tell me, how old is your daughter? What's her name?
I have three granddaughters, two sons. And two
I wasn't
grandsons.
Counting.
My granddaughter is 17 years of age.
Let me tell you about, then we don't talk about just your daughters, but your, also your granddaughters. When we're talking about prevention, what do you want for them? Also for your sons as well.
What I want is, first of all, comprehensive sex education as being the policy, of course, of my country and the world. I believe that young people need to be taught how to protect themselves, how to treat others, and how to really move forward to be the great leaders that I know they can be. But they have to be taught by us, and they have to be taught early on what comprehensive sex education means in the context of their lives, wherever they may be living.
Congresswoman, may I ask you to pass quickly to the Minister of Health and Social Welfare from Lesotho. Lesotho is actually a very small country population-wise, but almost one in four people that you pass by on the street is infected with HIV. This must be something, prevention must be something that you must wake up in the morning and think about every single day.
Absolutely. First of all, we are talking about prevention that is actually doable. Prevention of mother-to-child transmission or parent-to-child transmission is absolutely doable. And therefore, that one rests squarely in the hands of the government. We should be able to do that. I must agree with Congresswoman. Comprehensive sex education in Africa should be introduced. It is absolutely important. And what my Prime Minister always says, parents, talk to your children. We have to talk to our children about sex. It is difficult, but who do we want them to give advice? Their friends? The sex worker down the street, somebody who's trying to entice them to do something wrong. So we should be able to talk to our own children. But comprehensive, compulsory sex education in all schools should be introduced like yesterday.
I'm going to introduce you. Thank you very much for your comments over there. I'm going to introduce you to my friend Shanti, who in this period is going to zip over here. And while she zips over here, I'm right here. As you come over here, quickly to Claudia, young leader, youth leadership, 29 years old from Chile. This is not just a technical subject. How do we create, how do we spawn a new generation of youth leadership?
I think we see already a new generation of youth leadership. If we look around the people that are at this conference, they're here, we are here, speaking out. And the important thing about it is that to show that young people can be leaders, that we know what we want, we know what we need, and to really listen to those voices.
Shanti, this is my new friend who I met yesterday, and she's from Holland, and she's joined various things like the board of the Global Fund and the HIV Young Leaders Fund. If I've said it wrongly, I mean, if I said it incorrectly, you're just going to have to, like, excuse me over here. But she's really, really wonderful, and she's interested in all these things like social media. She was flip videoing, and she's Twittering and Facebooking, and I think that this is probably one of the ways forward. Tell me about the role that maybe that media, I mean, you took out your video yesterday, and it's so relatively inexpensive. Tell me about the things that you can create using social media to penetrate, to outreach, to get out there, to get beyond where perhaps stigma has blocked us from.
I think in these times, social media is very important. Since young people use it a lot, I mean, young people, parents are always complaining, like, my kid is so spends so many hours on the computer. But we have to think about that that media is so important to reach young people because it's the way they communicate in this time. So it's important to reach them the way they can be reached and want to be reached, and not by the ways we used to do it, just with education and things like that. And we have to involve them and let them speak. And media is the perfect thing to do this.
Thank you very much. And I'll tell you another way that you can transform youth leadership. You need people like the lady sitting about five to my right, who has brought so much benefit to so many people in this room. Thank you so much. So many of us went to Norway last year for the AIDS 2031 initiative, and the Crown Princess really invigorated and inspired us. And even though she may be a Crown Princess, I think that a lot of people who have other platforms can similarly use the same way. May not be the princess, but, you know, never mind. We'll work on that step by step, okay? Let's talk about something else. Let's talk about treatment. Of course, treatment is very important, but before we do talk about treatment, any comments from over here about what you've been hearing from our various speakers?
I'd like to just comment on how exciting it is to see the overwhelming support to human rights in this room. That's key, and it really shows that that's the way forward, and that's why on Tuesday also we're all going to be marching for human rights and saying this is the way forward in the HIV response. We're not going to reach universal access if we do not fulfill the human rights of everyone.
Talking about treatment, one thing is important. We have where we are today, we didn't imagine we could get there 5 years ago, but realizing we still have a long way to go. And the only way to get there is to ensure that we have continued access to funding so that treatment does not, there's no reversal on treatment. We must ensure that we have our children on treatment. I come from a country where 13%, only 13% of children with HIV have access to medication. It's unacceptable that our children are not on medication. We will be having a march 5 p.m. today looking at access to treatment and ensuring that we continue. Join us. I'm saying this. Please join us for this match. And what we are saying is treatment is non-negotiable. When we put people on treatment, we prevent new infections. When we put people on treatment, we ensure that we have quality lives and we're able to stay alive to take care of our children.
I hear you. And I hear, and before we cross the Congresswoman, I just want to affirm and to add to that, but Michelle Sidibe has been saying it's not just about the cost, it's also about the investment in treatment. Let's bear all these different things in our mind. Let's move back to the Congresswoman. And Barbara Lee, you'd like to add something over there?
Treatment really is prevention, and treatment should be early, it should be accessible, and it should be universal. And thank goodness in my own country we have healthcare reform now where that will be a reality.
You got like every thumbs up from Julio Montaner, who loves that, absolutely loves it. But don't worry, I will pinpoint that on you. It is in my notes later on there. Okay. We're going to take one question, and it's got to be quick. And the first question I see, that one over there, and you're going to have to whiz round over here. Come join me over here. And we're going to wrap up on treatment. We also want to talk about prevention. We want to talk about gender. There's so many things in here. You're going to have to run. You're going to have to run it. Come on. Thank you so much. You don't know how much time TV time costs. Okay. treat AIDS, don't turn back. I love that non-reversal message of that. Name, organization perhaps, and tell me what you want to say.
Sure. Sharon Ann Lynch with MSF, Doctors Without Borders. Dr. Ahmad Lepeng, nice to see you again. I wonder if you and Mo Ralaki can talk about what's happening in your country specifically, given the inequity of the treatment protocols that are now in place. In Lesotho, people are starting early. In Nigeria, not so much, not yet. What I would like to do also is to make sure, before these days are over, that every single government representative have a microphone in their hand where they answer a couple of questions. Do you support closing the quality gap in terms of access to treatment? Do you support closing the gap in terms of access to treatment within the next couple of years? Do you support a fully funded global fund? We've heard from one government official, thank you, that the goal is to get ARVs into every clinic. What about the others? Because instead, frankly, the donor countries are talking about rationing care, when of course we should be rapidly scaling up. Thank you.
Who wants to take that first? Rulake.
Thank you very much. I knew MSF would come up anytime. There is no town hall meeting without MSF. Thank you very much. I would like to share my perspective from the point of view of a SADC health minister. In SADC, we have adopted similar protocols in all the 14 countries. We are starting treatment early. We have moved from 200 to 350, and we are convincing a few countries that are still lagging behind. We have cross-border initiatives. We are treating every single child. And at 6 weeks, the children get DNA PCR. And as soon as we know the children are positive, we start treatment. So we have revised our protocols. We have cross-border initiatives that we share. We actually even apply to the Global Fund as SADC, not individual countries. So we really are doing a lot of good work, and we've been an activist from Lesotho. We are trying very hard as a country to make sure that, by the way, before Know Your Status became fashionable, in 2006 when we launched the Know Your Status, the international community was not very happy with Lesotho because they thought we wouldn't be able to do it. We did it. It is a brand that is recognizable. It is the entrance to treatment and care, and we are firm believers that if we enroll as many people as possible in treatment, we would have herd immunity that would reduce incidence. Therefore, we are aware of all the difficulties. Yes, we are looking for new enlightened and easy to treatment protocols that are going to be introduced. And we are aware that if without the fixed dose combinations, all what we are talking about may be difficult. But we are really advocates for early treatment. Thank you.
Thank you very much. First, looking at treatment, the question you ask is, how do people get on treatment? Right now, what we are seeing in countries, very little access to testing. There is no way you can get on treatment if you cannot access testing. If testing is being rationalized, if people are going out to test and you're giving people a target of testing 20 people a day, how are we going to get people on treatment? Realizing that that's one way that people need to access services. So for us, we need to see that in country, we're cutting down on programs. In country, you're having rationed. That's the word. Things are being rationed. USAID, PEPFAR, all the programs in country, there is right now, we all have limits where you're saying you need to treat X number of people, and for the first time in a long time, we're seeing waiting lines. We're seeing queues again for treatment, and that's not acceptable.
Thank you very much, Rulake. Thank you. I want to ask everybody to get their red green cards out again. I'm going to pounce you on 20 seconds with that. I want you to think about what the panel has been talking about. And as you do that, I do want to add Tuesday, 7 p.m., not just the Congress, but everybody throughout Vienna for the Human Rights March being led by Annie Lennox on Tuesday. Be there. and I'm sure she'll tell us more about that a bit later. But let's talk. Go back to the red-green cards. I mean, it was so fascinating, but there's a fundamental question that I want to know. I mean, you know, we were supposed to reach this universal access. What was it? By 2010, clearly, 6-7 months, I can't count, away from the end of the year, we're not going to get there. 4-5 months, or something like that? Now that's been extended to 2015. How many of you in this room really believe, when you look inside yourself, that by 2015, that universal hope will become a universal reality? Red, for no, I don't believe it at all. Green, yes, I do. Mercy me, I don't know what to do at this stage. I think we're pretty much split 50-50 over here, and we are going to ask the gentleman right in front of me, Hiro Nakatani, who is the Assistant Director General of the World Health Organization. And so I know that you're helping lead this kind of revolution in health systems. Let's quickly talk to you. Why do you think? What was it again you did?
Yes, I put green.
You do the green. And it's not because you're just part of the UN, is it?
No.
Okay. Okay. Now tell us why.
Because I think universal access is concerned. That is our hope. And we feel, think about past records. When we started 3x5, nobody believes. Now we come 5 million, as Michelle said. And more detail is coming during this conference. But I think, for example, WHO launched a new guideline, and that is really what our panelist is talking about. Early diagnosis is investment for human being and for humanity. I think that is persuasive. Let's be optimistic. Let's work together. WHO is one of UNAIDS co-sponsors. We are very much willing to and work with Mr. Sidibe and his team. Thank you.
I'd ask you to hold the microphone just there, okay. because I wanted to ask one other question to Mr. Nakatani. I was so inspired. I know that your mother was one of the first legal professors in Japan. She also helped to, one of her last major pieces of work was to help abolish the leprosy laws over in Japan. She was obviously a human rights advocate. Tell me, how are you going to take that spirit, which you grew up with in your own house, and how are you going to use it to revolutionize, to transform, and to use Michelle Sidibe's word to reshape health systems and the health sector in our world today through the WHO?
Yes, I think my mother, and also that is my value, is that survival is fundamental of human rights. I think that health sector has much to do. International agency has much to offer. So that is my commitment. And that is, I share with my colleagues in everywhere, 3 layers of WHO and other UN agencies, we will work harder. Thank you.
Thanks a lot for that, Hiro Nakatani from the World Health Organization. Quick question back to our panel, Rilaki. I really want to ask you this, because what does wiping out, and let's talk about game changers in the global response. Tell us, what does wiping out mother-to-child transmission mean to you personally?
I detest the name mother-to-child transmission. I hate it with everything in me. I'd rather have the word parents-to-child transmission. I think that I'm not, as a woman with HIV, responsible for transmitting HIV to my child, who should take responsibility. So for me, prevention of parent-to-child transmission means that, one, we must reduce and prevent infection in women and girls. If we are not addressing infections in women and girls, we can't reduce that. We must ensure that we prevent unintended pregnancies in women with HIV, which means we must have access to the whole comprehensive sexual and reproductive health packages as people with HIV, both men and women. We must ensure that we have access to testing services for pregnant women wherever they might be. We must ensure that our mothers have access to antiretroviral therapy to prevent transmission of these infections to their children. Finally, you must keep us alive to take care of our babies. We do not want to become vehicles for HIV negative orphans. We want to remain alive, which means comprehensive family-centered care for mothers, babies, and families. That's what it means to me.
And you know, Julio, of all the other things that, I mean, I've heard you speak a few times and we've had a few meetings this week as well. One of the things that you did come up that really struck a chord, I think, especially with me, is that you said that you can't even talk about mother to child until you start tackling HIV. I love what you say, and I love, and I really hear what you say here. One more quick show of hands. If you believe mother to child transmission is a way forward, you go for the green. If you think Rilaki is a way forward, parent to child transmission. So we can wipe out the discriminatory policies of that. Let's go for that. It's the same thing for you. It is the same thing for you. Okay, well, you will have your chance to talk about that in just a couple of minutes. Thank you very much, Rilaki, for that. I just have to ask you, because we are very lucky to have you on our panel today. I know that you, there's no shortcuts with you, Congresswoman Barbara Lee. Tell it like it is, because people are waiting, obviously, for treatment in developing countries, which we're all well aware of. People are waiting for treatment also in the United States.
Let me say, when we talk about this is a global epidemic, it is. It's affecting people throughout the world, including the United States. As I said earlier, we finally passed health care reform. Finally, we will have universal access to health care treatment. I've been tested 5 times publicly. First, it's important for leaders to get tested publicly, to encourage young people to get tested. That's extremely important. Secondly, when you look at the disproportionate rates of HIV and AIDS in the African American community and in communities of color, I hope you look at the work that the Black AIDS Institute, led by Phil Wilson, is doing. Very important work. Thirdly, let me just say to you, and in answer to the question earlier about believing that we'll have access by 2015, I believe we can. And We no one believed we could lift the travel ban so that people living with the virus, with HIV and AIDS, could come to the United States. No one thought we could do that. A few of us said, yes, we can, and we did. And we did. And so the next International AIDS Conference in 2012 is going to be in the United States of America. So I invite all of you to come, to really see what is taking place in my own country, so that you will know that our struggle for treatment, for access, for equal opportunity, for justice, for human rights is an international struggle. It's global, and we join with you as chair of the Congressional Black Caucus to make sure that our country is involved in this international effort. That is so important for the world to understand. And we declared a state of emergency in my own congressional district in 1999 as it relates to HIV and AIDS in the African American community.
Thank you very much for that. I also want to add, you lifted your travel restrictions on January 1st, I believe, this year, and I'm so proud that my country finally lifted its own on April 27th. I think that is... I think it shows huge leadership on the part not just of the world's top economy, but one of the world's most powerful emerging nations. So we've heard from our four panelists. Here is Congresswoman Barbara Lee. We thank you so much for being here. Also the Minister of Health from Lesotho, Murad Lepeng. And we also want to thank Claudia from Chile and also Rolak from Nigeria. Your stories really have really touched us. And of course, we are so lucky, genuinely lucky, to try to include as many voices as we can in 90 minutes. But we need leadership to pull this all through. We need the science. We need the global activists to try and unite what we think. I mean, a lot of people are out there demonstrating. They're going to have a demonstration at 5 p.m. just before the opening. What does that count if we don't have the people to pull it in, to draw the inspiration, for example, from young people? That's where we hand things back, and that's where we hold accountable. Michelle Sidibe and Julio Montaner, thank you very much for coming back on stage. If you'd like to take a seat over there in the sofa, perhaps you could both sit on the one farthest away from you. And with the microphones over there, you can perhaps share with us some of your thoughts of what you've heard over the past hour or so. But before you do that, a very, very quick question. Julio, you know, you always talk about now not treatment as prevention, but treatment as prevention. Are you suggesting that we really should just get up in the morning and start treating everybody who's been diagnosed?
No, James, I think that that's premature at this time. I think that what we have clearly stated is that there is a gap of individuals that meet medical guidelines for treatment. And what we're doing is missing the opportunity to optimally and effectively treat those individuals, bring treatment to the people, which will be redundant in benefits to them, to their society, and also because of the secondary prevention benefit of the treatment, reduce HIV transmission at large. And remember, it's not just about preventing HIV, it's also preventing tuberculosis, putting people to work, and consolidating the families. So today, we have to deliver universal access, and that's going to be redundant in benefits for the people, for their families, and for society at large.
I also want to ask Michelle a very quick question over here. This is something that's been brought up. A member of the audience from Brazil passed me a question around the back, but I want to channel it back, and let's have a quick word about financing. We have a special session later this week on innovative mechanisms to try and make up for the shortfall that we so clearly need. Obviously, the Global Fund has another replenishment conference coming up in October. In the meantime, while we do try to find ways to bridge the gap, how do we try to make sure that people don't fall in between that gap whilst we're trying to decide how we're going to find the money?
First thing, I want to say that it's not time to scale down. It's time to scale up. We have so much hope in the horizon. So it's not possible for us to go without a fully global fund. We need a global fund fully funded. It is not just my hope, it is the hope of a million of people who are not with us. People, like I said, without voice. And what we need to do is to strongly advocate to make sure that we will have a successful replenishment for the Global Fund.
Michelle, we're not... There is no way, I mean, with the face of AIDS being so complex, there's no way that we can, you know, fit in all the voices in the space of just 90 minutes. But I have to mention this, either to you or to Julio. We have to mention the word stigma and discrimination. If human rights is seen as a way of blocking access to AIDS prevention, AIDS treatment, tell me about the role of stigma and discrimination. Who wants to go first?
You know, I want to just certainly to conclude by saying that today, it is a new day. It is a new era for the response to HIV/AIDS. I need you, and let us make sure that we make this world free of new infection, free of discrimination, and let us make sure that we will have zero HIV-related deaths. It's possible. And let's make that our vision and fight for it. Thank you very much.
Julio.
James, a theme that it will emerge at this conference is one of looking for efficiencies. We are responsible to make the treatment not just effective, but more cost-effective, so that the investment on health that Michelle is asking for becomes a reality. From my perspective, very pragmatically, The lack of support for human rights is making our efforts highly inefficient. So even from that perspective, we must do it, and we must do it right and right now. And in that note, let me say, the Vienna Declaration that is being put forward at this conference has to be signed by everybody, because we're wasting time, effort, and energy fighting futile wars. We need to move forward with evidence-based decision-making. We need to drop ideology decision-making, and with that, we will have a better world.
Julio, one quick thing. Julio, I really want to ask you. You're on the plane coming to Vienna. You open your newspaper. Tell me what you saw in that photograph.
On my way to Vienna, I opened the newspaper, and there was an old Chinese proverb never heard before, and it says, tell those that are saying that it cannot be done to not to stop those of us that are doing it.
And adding on to what Julio said, please, if you haven't already, go to www.viennadeclaration.com, add your name there, and put your name to it, and be part of that change. Closing comments from Michelle Sidibe, head of UNAIDS. Give us something blindingly inspirational.
I want to just to call on the deputy president, because I think it's the first time in 10 years on the fight against HIV/AIDS that South Africa have been applauded. Please, deputy president. Please come. Sorry. Thanks. Thanks. And we need their leadership. We need your commitment. I think I heard from a president, deputy president of South Africa, words I was expecting. Let us fight for stigma. Let us fight for discrimination. Let us make sure that people who are hiding themselves, people who are going underground, could have access to services. And he was naming men having sex with men, sex worker, drug user, migrant population, prisoner. That is, for me, a revolution. Thank you very much.
And I want to add someone to all this. I would like to add someone to this. Someone who I saw on television earlier this year on the BBC, and I saw on CNN. And someone said to her, "Why are you involved in AIDS?" And instead of taking it defensively, she said, "Because I'm a mother, I'm a woman, I'm a person." And then she just went. And she speaks so informatively and so passionately about it. And she's such a thrill to be here today. The Crown Princess is a UNAIDS Goodwill Ambassador. Everybody can be a Goodwill Ambassador in your own workplace, in your own community, in your own homes. That is the power of it. You don't need the title. You need the inspiration, and you need the support from people all around this room. But it gives me enormous pleasure to add someone else to that UNAIDS family. The singer, the songwriter, the longtime activist, and the founder of the very successful Sing campaign, the woman who will lead us through the streets of Vienna on Tuesday and bring it back to the people movement, the newest international UNAIDS Goodwill Ambassador, ladies and gentlemen, Annie Lennox.
Thank you so much. What a wonderful event this is. I waited for this for 2 years. 2 years ago, I was in Mexico City. And I didn't really have an opportunity to talk collectively to people, but let me do that now. I would love to share with you just a little bit of the reason why I'm here. Today is Nelson Mandela's birthday. 22 years ago, I was one of the many musicians who performed at Wembley Stadium celebrating Madiba's birthday. At that time, he was incarcerated in Robben Island. We hadn't even seen a picture of him. We didn't even know what Mandela looked like anymore. And it looked at that time, really, that we might all be crazy, because maybe apartheid could never be overcome. But it was. And the Berlin Wall came down. And for me, Mandela and the ANC and all the members who fought against apartheid, both in the country of South Africa and around the world, are an emblem, a representation of hope over despair. And that is what we need to do. We need to focus. We need to galvanize. We need to be positive, constructive, and committed to long-term change that is possible. I was introduced to the HIV/AIDS pandemic in 2003. I stepped foot into South Africa for the very first time. I was invited to perform at the launch of 46664, Nelson Mandela's HIV/AIDS Foundation, and it was a tremendous privilege for me to be one of the artists there, to take part in that launch party and that campaign. And from that moment on, I have continued to campaign. We were all invited the day after the concert to go to Robben Island and to witness Mandela talking to the international press about the AIDS pandemic as it played out in South Africa and in the sub-Saharan Africa, in the huge continent of Africa. And I was shocked because in that extraordinary moment to witness Mandela, the emblem of the change that had taken place, the man who represented the transformation in South Africa, who took that country away from apartheid, we saw that there was no civil war, that they had peace and reconciliation, that this tremendous transformation had happened. There is Nelson Mandela describing the HIV pandemic as a genocide affecting women and children, as well as all of the other people that we know that are being affected. And that shook me so much. How could we hear the words coming from this man, genocide, and how could we not respond? How could we not know that every single day in that country, a country with the highest incidence of HIV transmission, 1,000 people dying on a daily basis, is that not appalling? If it had been taking place in a European or Western country, we would all be up in emergency. And I was so shocked by this. I'm a mother. I have two wonderful daughters. I've had human rights. I've had the access to the things that most of us simply take for granted. The right to have education, the right to good medical care and attention, the right to have safety, protection in the logistical ways, in all kinds of ways. And what I'm saying is that we, Western women, mothers, we know the value of our children's rights. We want our children, all children, to have access to good things, to life, to education, to health care. I don't want to see any mother die of a preventable disease. Why should that be? The mother, the one that we should honor, the one that we should value and protect, above all, the women of the world, they are the ones that desperately need us now. They need our support. UNAIDS statistics will tell you at this point in time that HIV and AIDS is the biggest killer of women of reproductive age globally. Why doesn't the world respond to this? It's an outrage. I'm outraged. It is anger and outrage that has kept me campaigning for the last 7 years and will keep me campaigning until we see the kind of changes that Michelle Sidibe is talking about. So please, let's put everybody, you must put green cards up. You must commit to this now. If you're putting red cards up, it means you shouldn't be here. You have to commit to the idea. You have to force civil society, political leaders, anybody of influence. You must believe that this can change. If you don't, you have no right to be here in a sense. We have to believe in the change. Otherwise, what are we doing? It's a 50-50 commitment. Please put your green cards up and say that you believe that this transformation can happen. The Deputy President of South Africa is here. We knew that there was, yes, come on, more green cards, please, come on, show them. There you have. The Deputy President of South Africa is standing here with us today and making a commitment in the National Strategic Plan that will take place. South Africa can be a beacon of light and transformative hope, just as it was back in the day when you overcame apartheid, Deputy President. We have seen through the World Cup, that you are now on the back again in the international focus. And we applaud you for this wonderful event. We truly do. So let's recommit and take it further and show the world that if it can happen in South Africa, it can happen all over the sub-Saharan continent of Africa, and it can happen in every part of the world. We need to recommit. Thank you.
Let's say some closing comments. Yes, closing comments for you. Closing, yeah. Yeah.
Wasn't he great? Isn't he great? You're so great. This is the first time we've met. I think you're wonderful.
I'm James.
Oh, hi, James. I'm Annie.
We all know that. Thank you very much for being here. It's so powerful. Even for you to be wearing an HIV-positive T-shirt is incredibly powerful. What you do, going through the media and reaching out to places that you don't even know, places that you've never even been to, is just it emboldens so many of us.
This is solidarity. I discovered this T-shirt because I was really honored and privileged to meet Zaki Ahmad, the founder of Treatment Action Campaign. One of the bravest HIV activists of all time. I am also a TAC member, and I'm part of Treatment Action Campaign, and I'm extremely proud to be part of that incredible movement.
Thank you very much, Annie. I just think that you spoke so beautifully about the power of South Africa, not just the country of South Africa, but imagining the dream of what it's done. I mean, it's incredible. 20-something odd years ago, it was so different. I think that we're so honored, so privileged to have you here, and that it seems only right that perhaps you could give us the closing comments today, Deputy President.
Thank you very much, James, and all the participants. I want to take this opportunity to slide in just a humble suggestion that what we need to remember all the time is that without you, this will not happen, because it is very easy, even for the most progressive government, to slide into complacency and to lose the will to continue pressing for change and improvement. And that is why it is so important that you as activists must always raise issues as sharply as you possibly can, because governments need that nudge all the time. If they are not nudged into action, they slide into passivity and doing things the usual, normal, lackadaisical way. And that is why it's so important as activists to remember that in order for us to succeed, you must remain in those trenches, because in where I come from in politics, we say freedom means recognition of necessity. As we win one step and concession, it only serves to reveal even more needs. And therefore, this struggle must continue until we overcome. Thank you.
So we also want to say thank you. We want to say thank you to Claudia, to Rulak, to the Health Minister, the Honourable Minister of Health and Social Work, Lesotho, and also US Congresswoman Barbara Lee. We want to thank Your Royal Highness, the Crown Princess with the Marriage of Norway, for being here, showing your leadership, as always, to us, Annie Lennox, Julio Santana, and also Michelle Sidibe, and of course, the Deputy President, the Honourable Ramir Molante. I think, let's get those green cards, let's use the next 6 days, and let's really try to transform, and as we all say here today, to reshape. Thanks very much, everyone, for watching.